Well, as we all celebrate, I have to say, Wendy, an unexpected Bear victory last night.
I know, I'm with you.
Didn't see that coming, but they pulled it off.
And quit whining that Aaron Rodgers wasn't playing because we were on our backup quarterback.
Right, right.
That's all I have to say.
Do that noise one more time. That was enjoyable. Yeah, that's what we say to you. In the studio with us right now, Rich Cohen, the author of Monsters, the 1985 Chicago Bears and the Wild Heart of Football. Rich, did you see this coming last night? Did you think the Bears could upset the Green Bay Packers?
I didn't see it coming, but, you know, the way the league is now, it seems like Seattle goes out to Tampa Bay, who hasn't won a game, and they barely squeak out a victory. So anybody can sort of – it's so different than 85, where it was so clear who were the men and who were the boys, you know?
Amen, brother.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. All right, let's talk about this 85 team. Was it just fate that made this happen, that made everything click? I mean, they were known primarily for their defense, but they had a pretty good offense, too. They had great coaching. There was no weak link in that 1985 Bear team, was there?
No, it was. Well, there was a weak link, which is if McMahon didn't play, they had trouble scoring.
Yeah.
Because it so much depended on his basically blowing off Ditka and calling his own plays. And he was the only one with the guts to sort of change Ditka's plays regularly, mm-hmm. you know? So if you see a lot of the great moments from 85, it's Ditka calls a screen pass to Peyton and McMahon audibles and throws the ball for 50 yards and the Bears win the game.
Yeah.
And he was incredibly creative and could score, and Dick would scream at him after the play. My favorite is Ditka yelled at him, "Why didn't you call my play?" And he said, "Because Willie was open, you know."
Willie Gault.
Yeah.
So, but really, it was like a perfect storm because they had this incredible defense, which, you know, it's the Bears franchise invented the modern quarterback with George Halasin, Sid Luckman. It kind of created the quarterback and inadvertently made the quarterback the most important person, too important. So it just took Buddy Ryan to realize, geez, if the quarterback's so important, why am I chasing around 10 guys when I can just kill one? You know?
Right.
And I interviewed Doug Plank, who's number 46, and he said their Bears' game plan was basically to knock out the quarterback. Buddy used to say it's time to open a new can of quarterback. So knocking out Aaron Rodgers on the first drive,
yeah,
that's a perfect game plan for the Bears.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, that's the way that other team played.
But now the New Orleans Saints got into some trouble for what they would call a bounty, where they
right.
would say, let's get this guy, let's knock him out of the game. So in 1985, was that more acceptable to have that going on, or you just didn't talk about
it? Well,
the
bounty is they were paying guys for it.
Yeah.
I asked one of the Bears about that. He said, we didn't have to get paid for it. We did it for free. You know?
It's just fun to do.
Yeah, I mean, it's the getting paid for element. And then the fact, stuff goes on in locker rooms where guys do stuff like any group of guys does stuff. But when you make it official,
yeah.
you know, and you have a system, then that's something completely different. It's like a street corner craps game compared to the table in Vegas. It's a completely different story.
For about a decade prior to the 1985 team, the highlight reel of any Chicago Bears game was Walter Payton. That's all you got. Hand off to Walter Payton and hope for the best. Now, all of a sudden, as you get into the 85 season, you've got so many stars everywhere on the field. Was he okay with that? Did he like sharing the limelight with everybody?
I think he wanted to win, and he was so happy to be – I didn't talk to him. Obviously, he died, like, what is it, almost 15 years
yeah.
ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but the guys I talked to, some of the guys said, you know, he did have a little trouble with it because you go from being the star and it being Walter left, Walter right, Walter up the middle to having to share the stage with the Fridge
mm-hmm.
and McMahon and all these new guys, and anybody would have – that's an adjustment, you know, and also – he wanted to be in the Super Bowl his whole career, and by the time they got there, he wasn't what he'd been. He was still a great running back, but he was a different kind of running back. He was the kind of running back you need 3 or 4 yards, he'll get them for you. But remember his first and second year when he would just run forever?
Yep.
It was pretty impressive.
Yep.
Yeah, there'd be a big pile of guys, and you'd think the play was over, and suddenly he'd emerge like somebody
yeah.
from a burning building. And, you know, in his dream, in his fantasy, he probably would like to have been in the Super Bowl when he could do that. But, you know, that's a great thing about sports, I think, and hopefully this book, which is it becomes like lessons for your life, which is it never works out the way that you exactly want it. But the main thing is, you know, Dick Butkus never got to a championship
right.
game, and Gale Sayers never got to a championship game. And the main thing for Walter, I think, is he got to the Super Bowl and they won.
Wouldn't you say if there's two regrets on that whole season, it's number one, losing to the Miami Dolphins on a Monday night. That was their only loss of the whole season. And number two, it was that Walter Payton didn't get to score a touchdown in the Super Bowl.
Yeah. Well, as far as the Dolphins, for sure. And actually, the great thing would have been if the Dolphins went to the Super Bowl. You
right.
Know, then
they
you would
could have avenged
this
it.
Awesome matchup and
it
chance to
been.
Remove that
yeah.
blemish. And the reason why they lost to the Dolphins is really interesting. It's because Don Shula is a Hall of Fame coach. And he figured out how to make the 46 defense use its own strength against itself. He tricked the Bears.
Yeah.
And he let the Bears rushers come in and then roll Dan Marino out. And they got there and he was gone. And where was he? He was 10 feet away. You know, and the 46 defense had this huge weakness, which was it didn't have a lot of coverage down the field because everyone was rushing. So suddenly if Dan Marino had an extra 2 seconds because he was such a great quarterback, suddenly the weaknesses revealed themselves. And suddenly you had Wilbur Marshall, a linebacker, covering Nat Moore, a speedy little receiver, just couldn't keep up with him. And that was the game where Ditka wanted Buddy Ryan to go back into the traditional nickel defense and put more guys in coverage. And Buddy Ryan refused. And that was so interesting because Buddy Ryan was like an ideologue. He had this idea about the quarterback and getting the quarterback. Ditka was a pragmatist. He just cared about winning. And they actually almost came to a fist fight, you know, during halftime. And there, some people said they were in a fist fight. And Ditka's response was, did you see Buddy? Did he look like he'd been beat up?
Good answer.
You know, and as far as Peyton in the Super Bowl, yeah, I mean, and I spoke to a lot of these guys. I spoke to McMahon. I spoke to Ditka about that. And they all regret it. But, you know, the funny thing is they say they didn't even remember it or realize it was an issue.
Really?
Because they were so focused on winning the game. And Peyton was given the ball a lot inside the five, but he was, like, triple teamed. The Patriots had decided whatever we're going to do, we're not going to let Walter beat us. And that created holes everywhere else, which the Bears used to score. So Peyton's influence was there as the guy everyone was trying to stop. So McMahon said McMahon's first touchdown was a running touchdown. And he said it was a play actually called for Walter to score, but he looked over and Walter was completely covered and he looked upfield and there was a huge hole and he just ran into the end zone.
So he helped in his own right.
He did.
It was such a great feeling this morning pulling out the Bears jerseys for my kids. And when they wanted Bears jerseys, they didn't want Urlacher. They wanted 34 on there. Peyton. Yeah. So it's really cool to pull
that out this morning. It is.
Rich Cohen in the studio with us. Monsters, the 1985 Chicago Bears, the wild heart of football. I was at richcohen.com. And God, I forgot how cute Tim Reitman was. I'm sorry.
Those big black eyebrows,
yeah.
All that hair.
Well, somebody said we couldn't believe he wasn't a model, you know?
Yeah.
He sent me, I talked to him for the book and become kind of friends with him. And I was looking for photographs from a bunch of these guys. And a bunch of them sent me photographs for the books.
Yeah.
A bunch which I couldn't use because of the resolution, you know, and all blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
But he sent me a great picture, which is on the website, which is authorrichcohen.com. And it's like a snapshot on the sidelines of him and Matsui in the middle of a game.
Yeah.
And when you see a picture like that as opposed to an official picture, you really remember, oh, these are real guys having a great time.
Yeah.
And that was what was so excellent about 85, which is, now it seems like they're often not having a great time. In 85, it seemed like these guys were having a blast.
Well, you've heard the adage that winning cures everything. You talked about some of the clashes, Buddy Ryan and Mike Ditka and the quarterback. So, Jim McMahon, don't you think that when you're winning, even though there's those clashes, you can kind of bury them pretty easily and say, yeah, in the long run, though, we're winning. So what does it matter?
Yeah, but yet still, you know, Peyton got upset that he didn't score even though they won. And then Buddy Ryan left. You know, some people said if Buddy Ryan had stuck around for another 2 or 3 years, then they could have won a few more Super Bowls. Buddy Ryan got a you know, head coaching job and took it because everybody kind of wants to express themselves and be the leader.
Sure.
You know, that's what was so great about the Bears, too, is they had so many leaders. You know, but usually that ultimately results in clashes. So later on, you know, you had Dan Hampton saying he didn't think Jim McMahon was legitimately injured when he missed games,
right.
And you know all that kind of stuff. And then I thought was interesting is after the Bears won, it seemed to me that every guy on that team did two things: open a bar and write a book.
They did, didn't they? They did. That was the way to
did.
Go.
Yeah.
One of the testaments to how cool the Bears were at the time was Moonlighting was one of the big shows on television, and Bruce Willis, who is considered by many, myself included, to be one of the coolest guys on television on Moonlighting, all of a sudden he's wearing a headband like Jim McMahon with words written on it like Jim McMahon.
Yeah.
Just to say, hey, I might be Bruce Willis, the coolest guy on TV, but that guy's even cooler than
right.
me.
Everyone bowed down to Jim McMahon in 1985. I mean, he was the first athlete to appear on the cover of Rolling Stone.
Yeah.
And going back and thinking about the, you know, Pete Rozelle said he couldn't wear the Adidas headband, so he wore the headband that said Rozelle. Going back, and it was the coolest, and he waited until he scored, and then he turned, took his helmet off and looked at the camera.
What a little punk.
Yep.
But what's so cool about it was it's sort of like, this is classic Jim McMahon, which is they basically, he had two choices. Either, you know, rebel and pay a huge fine. He was
right.
only making $100,000 that year.
So think the fines about that. Were real. Think okay. about that.
I know. That's nothing. By today's standards, seriously.
Nothing.
Rebel and pay a huge fine or submit and give up some part of his Jim McMahonness, and the Punky QB found a third way.
Yep.
You know, you used to see Ditka getting so irritated with him, you mm-hmm. know, on the sidelines. It was fantastic. And now, gosh, I think back of the 85 season, I loved football. I mean, really, I'm thinking like this was just yesterday. This right. is all fresh. I'm all passionate. What's happened?
Well, so much of it was so great about that team was it was about the storylines outside the game. All the stuff you're mentioning. There was a real Godfather element, you know. You had George Halas, the old man
yeah.
with the lantern jaw,
yeah.
bringing Mike Ditka back from exile. Mike Ditka, who'd said, the old man is so cheap, he throws around nickels like they're manhole covers, you know, giving him the team. Ditka, all the reporters in Chicago saying, this is the most insane decisions. This guy's absolutely nuts. But then Halas keeping Buddy Ryan. So you really had two coaches.
Yeah.
And then you had McMahon, who had been kicked out of Brigham Young for violating the Mormon code, shows up in Lake Forest for the first practice with a case of beer, you know? And they run the Bears Mile, and McMahon can barely finish and throws up after he's finished, and they cancel the Bears Mile after that when the players ran for the press. And all that was going on. And, you know, and my favorite game was the third game of that season, the Vikings game, where McMahon wasn't supposed to play, and he showed up in his uniform, and he followed Ditka up and down the sidelines and said, put me in, put me in, put me in. And finally, Ditka, exasperated, you know, God, just get out of here, go in, throws immediately, you know, audibles the play, throws an immediate touchdown, throws three touchdowns in seven plays.
Yeah.
And at that moment, you said, oh, my God, this team is like no other team.
Larger than life.
Way larger than life. Rich, you should write a book about these guys. That would sell like crazy. Oh, you have. Wait a minute. It's called Monsters, the 1985 Chicago Bears and the Wild Heart of Football. We'll come back. You can stick around for just a couple more minutes. More with Rich Cohen after this. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN. We're talking about the 1985 Bears with Rich Cohen. Rich's book is called Monsters, the 1985 Chicago Bears and the Wild Heart of Football. All right, here's something we could debate for the rest of the day and well into tomorrow. Are the 1985 Bears the greatest NFL team ever assembled?
Definitely the greatest defense.
Yeah.
You know, they were the second best offense that year, but I think for a single season, I think they were the greatest team ever.
Yeah.
Because not only, you know, other great teams, they had close, they dominated. I mean, you had games where other teams didn't get like a first down,
mm-hmm.
where they got negative yards in the playoffs, playoff teams. The playoff teams are the best teams. So they go through the entire playoffs, and really, the truth is a Super Bowl without really giving up a point.
Yeah.
You know, so the defense not giving up a point. So to me, there's no question that's the best team in the history of professional football.
It seemed like on those Sundays when that team was playing, like now we watch the games and we think we might win, they might win, somebody's going to win, we don't know who. It was never a question of if they were going to win. It was by how much they were going to win by. Every Sunday you'd go, are they going to win by 15, 20, 30? Who knows?
Not only that, you could actually see the moment when the spirit of the other team broke.
Right.
I mean, to me, one of the greatest days in American history, we should study it with Washington's birthday and 4th of July, is the Sunday in Dallas when the Bears knocked Danny White out of the game twice.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I interviewed Danny White, who was the quarterback for the Cowboys, and he said his only thought that day was just get rid of the ball as fast as I can. He wasn't thinking about winning, completing a pass. He's like, as long as I'm holding this ball, I'm in big trouble. Just got to get rid of it, whether I throw it away, hand it off, just get rid of it. And I spoke to Otis Wilson, who knocked Danny White out both times, and he said Danny White, people in Texas know Danny White's still a bad driver because he flinches every time he sees number 55.
That is fantastic. I was like, hot potato. That is so funny.
Well, I used to say, there was a friend that I used to watch a lot of the games with, and I'd say some Sunday, one of their opponents is just going to give, they're just going to not show up. They're going to go, we're going to get hurt. Why play these guys?
Right.
We don't stand a chance.
Well, you felt that, you know, really, you felt, also Otis Wilson compared it, you know, that team to like the young Mike Tyson. If you remember when Mike Tyson, no robe, no fancy nothing, just the plain black shorts, walk into the ring, and you see the other guys just not want to meet his eyes, and it was over before it began. And so as the Bears started to roll, their aura preceded them, and that became a big weapon. So when you got into the Super Bowl and Tony Eason was a second year quarterback from the U of I, was seemed like he was gonna be a great quarterback, they ruined his whole career that day. I mean, they, and he was like the guy who fought Sugar Ray Leonard, you know, no mas, no mas. He wouldn't he wouldn't go back in the game. You know what I'm talking about? I'm
Roberto Duran?
Yeah, like Roberto Duran. And
that was impressive.
Yeah.
I like boxing. Right.
That was very impressive.
And I know that fight very well because all the moves that Sugar Ray Leonard did to Roberto Duran, my brother did to me. So I learned them very, very closely.
That's excellent.
But, yeah, but so he later on, it's just funny, the guys that had illnesses when they played the Bears. Joe Morris, who was the running back for the Giants, he got a migraine. I called the 46 migraine and had to leave the game. And Eason said he was recovering from the flu. I called the 46 flu. It's like avian flu, something like that.
A little bit like that. And you know what made, I mean, these guys were larger than life, but that damn Super Bowl shuffle, wasn't that the best thing?
The best and the worst, right?
I mean, Steve Fuller was the worst. But everyone else, you know, Willie Galt, soft and smooth as a chocolate swirl. I mean, we all know these.
The lyrics are in our brains forever.
Mama's Boy, Otis.
Yeah, well, the
kind.
Funniest is that Steve Fuller actually, who I don't think really scored through a touchdown pass through the 10th week, said, throw like lightning and run
like
thunder.
Yeah.
But I would say it's the best and the worst. The part of you that thinks it's the best, that's the 17-year-old part of you that really got it. And the part of you that thinks it's the worst is your adult self stealing a good time from your 17-year-old self.
Give me just a minute on this. One of the most unlikely heroes in the history of the NFL is William Perry. It just doesn't add up that this guy would have been a folk hero, and yet there he was. He was doing national commercials for McDonald's. I know people who's on their refrigerator would have his number during the whole year. They would put William Refrigerator Perry's number on their refrigerator. Isn't that a strange series of coincidences that leads him to become a national hero?
Yeah, I mean, what happened is in 84, the Bears lost the NFL title game to the 49ers and Bill Walsh. Bill Walsh, the coach known as the genius, you know, who pioneered the West Coast offense. Running out that game, Walsh ran something called the Angus formation where he gave the ball to a guard who normally would, and just to run out the clock. And Ditka thought it was kind of a slap in his face, kind of a humiliation. So when Ditka got back to San Francisco the next year, the third game of the next year, and was crushing the 49ers, he gave the ball to the fridge just to sort of ram it in Bill Walsh's face, I believe. But then anybody who's like read science fiction knows that the doctor always loses control of his creation at some point.
Right.
You know, and the fridge just became bigger than everything, to the point where now when you talk to people about the 85 Bears, if they don't know the team, everyone will say, oh, yeah, the fridge.
Yep.
But something about the fridge was he was so full of happiness, that guy, so full of joy, that it was like almost like a gateway drug for non-fans into the game.
And open the door, the light goes on.
Exactly. And, you know, back in August, there was an erroneous death report on Twitter that said that he had died.
Well, he's been in very poor health the last few years.
But he's not.
Good. We need him around. Rich, what a great book. Monsters, the 1985 Chicago Bears and the Wild Heart of Football. Wouldn't make a terrible holiday gift.
No.
It would not make a bad holiday gift. So pick it up. There's many places to get it. I would say Amazon is your best bet, correct?
Very easy to go on Amazon.
And, Rich, I've read you in Vanity Fair. You do some other fine work, not just this book, but you're really a very good writer.
I do a lot of celebrity profiles, and even once, as a piece of stunt journalism, grew a Hitler mustache and walked around New York to see what would happen.
Can I find that online?
Yeah, that's on my website.
Wow.
I will delve into this. Thank you for bringing us back to that fabulous time in our life, that 17-year-old kid, because really, now my enthusiasm is bigger than ever for
Good.
The Bears.
I like to see that.
Because we're coming off a Packer win, too. That helps.
That adds. All right, a lot more ahead. Thanks, Rich.
Thanks.
Stick around. It's WGN.